Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
The Dan Bernstein Show. Weekdays 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
With respect to my new role with the Bulls organization, I'm excited for this opportunity. This is my dream. Our ultimate goal is clearly to bring an NBA championship to the city of Chicago. That is what every team in NBA strives for. All we can control is our approach and the process behind every decision. A firm foundation is absolutely vital. I'll build that here in Chicago.
That is the voice of a man in charge of Bulls basketball. He is Arturis Karnišovas, installed officially yesterday, and now he's heading out to assemble the front office and probably down the line have that front office assemble a new coaching staff as well. Here to give us a national perspective on the new look Chicago Bulls is a guy you can follow on Twitter at HoopsCritic. You listen to him on SiriusXM Radio, NBA TV. He is Brian Geltzeiler. He's on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Well, after all the reports, Geltzy, they finally went and did it. And they talked about how far behind they had fallen. And it's time for a new look Chicago Bulls. How do you think they've handled this so far?
Not great. I mean, you know, I think, Dan, you got to look at there's a bunch of different ways to look at this. But the reality is, and sometimes you can come out with a good result with a faulty process. The process was faulty. And the reality is that they end up with a very capable, very bright executive in Arturis Karnišovas to do this job. So the result ended up being very good. There's still some questions abound regarding, you know, how the rest of the front office is going to operate and the fact that it hasn't been a clean break from the last regime is something that is of concern, to be frank. But I do think you got a guy that was a lot of teams would have wanted to get to run their team. He had been in the mix for plenty of other jobs. Again, widely, widely respected executive. So I think Karnišovas is the right guy to run the show. The question becomes, is he going to have the autonomy that he needs to be able to run the show properly?
What specifically troubled you about the process?
Well, okay, a couple of things. All right. First and foremost here, just the fact, listen, you know, I'm going to start with this. The NBA does not have a Rooney Rule, and the NBA is under the belief that they don't need a Rooney Rule because, listen, 75% of the players are African-American, and generally it just hasn't been a problem over the years. Well, as time goes on here and we look at the situation, I don't believe there is an African-American lead executive in the league. There's a handful of GMs underneath the team president, but in terms of team presidents, it's few and far between in terms of executives. And then you look at an assistant or a GM under Sam Presti in Oklahoma City, like Troy Webster, who's in the mix for a lot of jobs. You know, the Bulls, he wasn't on the Bulls' initial list to talk to. And they pulled a lot of guys kind of out of left field that hadn't been in jobs in a while. And guys like Brian Colangelo and Danny Ferry. Now, again, listen, I know Billy King's right along with Danny Ferry if Ferry were to be hired. So that's something that, to be fair, is worth mentioning. But, you know, even like Wes Wilcox, who I know is who works with me at NBA Radio, he was a candidate for the job. But I just feel like that part of the process, and then by the time they said, okay, we're going to hire an African-American GM, it just came off very reactionary, Dan. And I think that in this day and age, it's something that you got to have a little more vision on and be out in front of a little bit. You know, so that was my – I have a couple other issues with the process, but that was first and foremost my main issue.
What are the other issues?
All right, well, let's – here's the thing, all right. John Paxson has a relationship with the Reinsdorfs, long-standing, long time, right? I admire the Reinsdorfs' loyalty to John Paxson. At a certain point in time, listen, when an NBA team is, and you're making major decisions for an NBA team, personnel or otherwise, and your president of basketball operations is making those decisions. That president needs to have a degree of autonomy. That's really important. Now, again, ownership signs off on everything because who's paying the bills, Dan, right? Ownership's paying the bills. So ownership's going to sign off on everything. But generally, when you hire a guy that you trust, you're going to sign off on most things he wants to do unless there's some cost prohibitive things involved. The reality is having John Paxson as a senior consultant there and an ownership's ear while Karnisius is trying to do stuff, the guy that essentially made the mess is now going to be an ownership's ear while they get another guy cleaning the mess. I don't love that. I don't love that at all. And listen, again, I appreciate what they're doing with John Paxson. I appreciate what he means to that organization, how long that he's been there. But if we're really making a clean break here and you really want to start a brand new era of Chicago Bulls basketball, keeping the guy that made the mess in the ear of owners while you have another guy trying to clean the mess that he made, to me, is problematic.
What's amazing to me is, judging from what we heard yesterday and taking everyone at their word, Brian, that this would not have happened at all had John Paxson himself not approached Michael Reinsdorf and essentially said, we are way behind the times. We're not doing the same kind of basketball business as other teams are doing. And if you find somebody ready to do it, it's going to be somebody who's not me. And he fell on his sword. That this would not have happened. And it's amazing to me, it's astonishing to me that it got to that point, that how you could have a team with a really solid business side and really good game presentation and a decent talent base allow themselves to get so far behind that it took their top executives tapping ownership on the shoulder and saying, yeah, you might want to bring in somebody else to do this because we're not operating in the way that the state of the art is operating here. I can't think of this ever happening before.
Dan, I'm going to put it to you this way. All right. It's a movie reference that I know you'll appreciate. In the words of Jim Belushi from the movie About Last Night, pull this leg and it plays Jingle Bells. Okay. Paxson knew that something was coming down the pike here. All right. Paxson, listen, he knew he wasn't going to be able to stay in this job. So run and fall on your sword and have a chance to stay on the payroll as a senior consultant. John Paxson's no dummy. And that's exactly what happened. This was going to happen one way or the other because he's right. The Bulls were behind the times. But this thought process that somehow the Reinsdorfs were going to sit tight if John Paxson didn't tell them that it's time to make a change is absolutely crazy. You know, listen, we've heard the stories that have come out of there, the level of dysfunction, you know, Doug Collins being involved and the fact that not a lot of people were thrilled with some of the input that he had and the way that he had input from coaching staff up till management. You know, we know that Gar Forman had already been reassigned, even though they ended up before they sent him packing from the organization. You know, so like there's so many different things that have happened within that organization. Paxson was in trouble. And this way, you know what? He put himself on the side of the ball with the Reinsdorfs, so he gets to stay. And listen, very smart by John Paxson. Is it what's best for the Bulls? I don't know that it's what's best for the Bulls, because Karnisius is going to need to operate with his people. And listen, now as it is, because of the Bulls, they did what they did without necessarily sitting there. Listen, the story is they want to interview Troy Webster, and Troy Webster said no. Mark Spears of Yahoo tweeted this out a few days back, that Webster felt it was a token type of interview, and that's why he wouldn't accept it. So that's the kind of the Bulls story. But they've also, listen, and not that it's a bad thing, but they're now kind of almost trapped into hiring an African-American general manager under Karnisius. Like, it's the whole process has kind of kept backing them into corners, and they're chasing a perception in terms of how they've done this that's making it more difficult for them to do it efficiently. Now, again, all that said, I have the supreme level of confidence in Karnisius that he can come in there and do the job. Because here's the thing about this roster. It's a poor roster in terms of fit. And in terms of pulling a team together, it's going to be a basketball team. But it is asset-rich. And I think if you are active this summer in terms of trying to leverage some of these assets into getting guys that fit what they're trying to do better and fit around some of your main pieces better, I think you can turn this thing around relatively quickly. And that, to me, is a number. Because, listen, Karnisius is no dummy. He knew there was dysfunction coming in. But you know what? The level of talent on the roster was attractive enough to him that he feels like he can come in and turn this thing around relatively quickly and make this thing work in spite of the front office and ownership dysfunction.
So if the process, again, is maybe would be ideal in your world, and they still want to have a home run GM hire, like you say, maybe having boxed themselves in a little bit. How do they win this? What's the right way out of this where they can still come out ahead with a well-respected GM? Who is that guy?
Oh, there's plenty of guys out there. If you want to get Mark Eversley from the Sixers and give him a bump, who's an assistant GM to Elton Brand there right now, that's a guy that's a very good candidate. Malik Rose in Detroit, if you wanted to give him a pay bump and have him come in and be in there under Karnišević, you could still do really well with a GM hire. Now, understand something. When you have a president of basketball operations that hires a GM under them, there's no real such thing as the home run hire. The home run hire is the lead guy. Whatever you put in underneath has got to work with him. There's plenty of good options, and they're going to be able to get a really good option to be able to be a GM under him. So I don't necessarily know that you have to go for the home run hire. Whatever it is, it's got to be somebody that Karnišević is comfortable working with and comfortable with in terms of respecting their opinion enough, that they go on the road and look at players, that they oversee a scouting staff, and that he doesn't feel like he has to micromanage. And that's the thing. Karnišević is going to want to be a guy that delegates authority. He comes out of Denver with Tim Connelly, and one of the great things Tim Connelly has done in Denver is his ability to delegate authority to Karnišević, hence why Karnišević is so respected around the league. So now he's going to come in, and his model is not going to be any different. So the importance is his comfort with the guy. And again, they'll have plenty of good options. It will work out fine. It's just, and that's my point. Process wasn't great. Result will be fine. It just does give you the feel that ownership's been chasing their tail in this entire search.
So do you think this does anything to the aspect of the Bulls brand that reflects toward the league, that reflects toward star players, toward agents, toward marketing associates? Do they still have a chance for a reset to show the league that they're doing business in a more modern and different fashion that could attract some of these guys?
Yes, they do. And that's because they put Karnišević in charge. That's correct, because that's a guy with a modern vision who, again, really well respected. And the bottom line is going to be this. If you can put a good team on the floor and start to win some games and improve on that front, that's going to make everything better. That's going to make everything better. It's still a bottom line business, Dan. You got to come out and win. And where the Bulls became majorly disappointing coming out of this season is they made the mistake of believing they were ready before they were ready. And that was that's a big problem this year. Listen, you signed Thad Young to a contract. You drafted Kobe White. You had Chris Dunn in what was a crucial year for his development and his career, and you signed Satoransky. Okay, the Otto Porter trade, I mean, it hasn't worked out, but you had to understand coming in, he wasn't really going to be an answer in terms of you having all these other young guys. You were better off being a little bit worse, being a little more patient, and finding which young guys could develop instead of getting veterans that were getting paid money and needed minutes. It was just a tactical mistake of not being patient enough. That's the kind of stuff that won't happen again under Karnišević, because he comes in with a clean slate right now. He buys himself some extra time that, let's be frank, that Paxton and Foreman didn't have anymore. So I think for the Bulls, even if it takes a year or two, but I do think you're a year or two away from being a team that can compete for the playoffs. And considering how rough it's been lately, I don't think that's a bad thing, and I think it gives the fans some hope. But there's no doubt they can compete for high-end talent, whether it's on the coaching side, whether it's on the player side. They can go out and compete for high-end talent because they got a guy in charge that inspires confidence.
Yeah, as we let you go, I laughed out loud at a tweet that I saw a couple of days ago, and it was David Roth, the writer, the former Deadspin writer, just a terrific writer in intellect. And he said that you know you are of a certain age and from New Jersey when you actually remember being on the playground and somebody hits a mid-range jumper and someone yells out, "Look at Karnišević over there," because he was so he was well-known and well-liked that people don't remember that when the Big East was the Big East and Seton Hall and these teams were on everybody's TV, that people knew how good Arturis Karnišević was. And were he the very same college player doing what he did in college today, no question in my mind, he becomes a functional, valuable NBA player that he ended up showing he was as a decorated European player back then.
100% right. You know me, Dan, and that question's right in my wheelhouse because I'm a Jersey guy, Seton Hall, 15 minutes from where I'm sitting right now, and I'm a big Seton Hall fan. he was the ideal 3-and-D guy because he could shoot it. He could put it on the board. You know who he reminds you a little bit of? And I think you're right. He'd be more than a functional NBA player right now. He reminds you of Bohan Bogdanovic with Utah. That's the kind of game that he has. He could create a little bit.
Good comp.
He could create a little bit off the bounce. He wasn't the most athletic defensive player, but he was a grinder on that end of the floor. And he'd never give up effort-wise. Plus, he led, and he was competitive as hell. You're absolutely right. You know you're of a certain age when you remember that. And, yes, he could shoot from the mid-range. But, listen, he was also a guy that could shoot from deep a little bit, too. Like, he had that kind of ability. But, again, back in that era, athletically, today's NBA era, if you can shoot the thing and you're willing to grind a little bit defensively, you'll find a spot in this league. You can. And he absolutely would have had a role and would have been a meaningful player. And again, I don't know that he was ever as athletic as Bogdanovic, but athletically, somewhere between Bogdanovic and Kyle Korver lied Arturis Karnišević. And he was that kind of player. I loved watching him in college. He was a blast to watch. And again, competitive as hell and came, listen, after another really good international player, and Andrew Gaze, who came from Australia and was on that team that lost in overtime in 89 to Michigan. I know you know about that team as well. So a little bit, you know, he came a little bit after that and was kind of, our version of Andrew Gaze coming next.
Yeah, we always made fun of Andrew Gaze because he was like 37 years old when he was out there. He'd been playing pro ball in Australia, whatever it was. Like, come on, man, this isn't fair.
PJ Carlissimo, man, I got to tell you, what a great job he did with that team and that group. And you had a couple of local guys there, and Ramon Ramos and Mark Bryant was a guy who went to Columbia High School right down the street from me in South Orange, New Jersey. That was fun seeing the whole team.
Yeah, Mark Bryant was a Bull. He was one of the original Tim Floyd guys right after the championship era. Mark Bryant was a starting power forward for a while.
Yeah, and I watched him play in high school, and he was unbelievable. We used to call him the giant Mark Bryant, 6'9" in high school, and dunking on everybody and everything. It was wild. It was, you look back at that era and what that was. I mean, I have a story that I always left. Anytime I interview Ala Abdel Nabi, he dunked on my head in a freshman game in Bloomfield, New Jersey, back in 1984. Okay, I had run my mouth to a player in the game before that we played his team at home. They brought him from varsity to the freshman team just to dunk on my head and take him out of the game 3 times in a row because I ran my mouth enough. So we had some fun stories from back in the 80s from high school ball here in Jersey.
Ala's my dude. Ala was my guy at Duke. You know, he came back from one tournament. And he had this awesome Adidas jacket that was too small for him, kind of. It was like, and I said, that doesn't fit you. And he's like, yeah, okay, you want it? Give me $50 for it. I'm like, fine, I'll give you $50 for that. So we committed an NCAA violation there as he's selling me swag that he got. And then the only other Ala story, there's a Central Campus courts who were playing pickup. He used to play pickup games just randomly. And Randy Cuthbert, who was the tailback of the football team, incredible basketball player, and we were playing against them. And Ala liked to show off his handles all the time. So he liked to play guard in these pickup games. And at one point, he's right in the center of the floor, and he came out to guard me, and I cross him over, and he punches me in the balls so hard that I almost threw up.
Wow.
It was just like immediately he knew he was crossed over, so he just reached out and just got
That's
me square.
Funny.
I'm like, dude,
so funny. And he's such a nice guy, too, Dan. Like, it's funny, when I told that story on NBA TV and him dunking on my head, and he didn't remember me specifically, but he also did mention that they did that a couple of times where they brought him into a freshman game to dunk a couple of times and pulled him out of the game, and he was so apologetic. He's like, I'm so sorry I did that to you. I'm like, believe me, I can promise you, dude, I had it coming. I don't know that you had it coming and getting it in the family jewels, but I'll tell you, I ran my mouth up the game before. I had it coming.
Gelsey, always fun talking. Continued good health to you and your family.
You too, Dan. Take care. All the best to you and yours, buddy. We'll talk again soon.
We'll see you. Brian Geltzeiler at Hoops Critic. Strong opinions from him. And we're going to break it up a little bit. I've got a baseball thing that I have been dying to get to, and now I can finally get to it ahead of the midday midway. MLB.com has been putting these lists together of all-time guys at a given position for MLB teams. So as we go to break, here's this question that I'm going to give you. MLB.com looked at every organization, and they named the best second baseman in the team's history. So it's pretty easy for the Cubs and the Sox. You know who the best second baseman is in White Sox history. You know who the best second baseman is in Cubs history. Well, there are seven other MLB organizations, one, two, three, seven, that have either a connection to the Cubs or the Sox for their own all-time great second baseman. There are five other organizations' best second baseman ever with Cubs connections. There are two with White Sox connections. So think about this. This is, for an organization, the best second baseman they have ever had play for them. And it's what they did for that team. So think about it. Seven Chicago connected, outside of the Cubs and Sox own. How many of these other players can you name? Usually the texters get some of these things right. Feel free to text, feel free to email, or just listen along. We're going to quiz Jay Zawoski and Ray Diaz as well. But can you name these seven other all-time great second basemen with Cubs or Sox connections? I'll have the answer in just a moment. It is next on The Score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.